Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. We have made it through the week. It is Friday, September 11th. Let's never forget what happened on this day in history. First on the docket, Chad Daybell's attorney objects to joinder. And he better come up with something better than this. Second, prosecutors in the Miss Maxwell case want to stop the companion civil case. We'll tell you why. Third, the other woman who has been discussed in the Suzanne Morphew case speaks out. Fourth, next time you think you're having a bad day, just remember you're not this guy. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day and a recap of our contestants throughout the week so that you can choose the dumb criminal contestant of the week. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. First, if you haven't done so already, we'd ask that you hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, and as always, leave us a comment below and hit that little bell over there in the corner so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. First on the docket, well, Chad Daybell objects to joinder. Oh, shocked, right? Well, guess what? We know the prosecution is asking to join Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell's trials. Makes sense. Judicial economy, all right? Don't need to be doing multiple trials the same way over and over again. Well, Mr. Pryor, the attorney for Chad Daybell, filed a motion to object to the joinder. And he states that the reason why they shouldn't have a joint trial in this particular case is that, well, in all of eastern Idaho, there's been extensive media coverage, and he says that if we have one trial, that we're going to have even more media, which is going to create even a bigger circus, and next thing you know, cats and dogs will be getting along, and the world will end, right? Well, Mr. Pryor is going to have to come up with something better than that for a motion for severance. Mr. Pryor will have to come up with something much better than that if he's going to achieve his motion's goal, which is to have separate trials. So, as we have always tried to do here, is bring you the facts and the law. So, let's take a look at the Rule 14, which governs joinder. Now, this is the federal rule, but the states are very, very similar. Now, you would think that if you're going to object to a motion for joinder, you'd probably state in there something that the rule would say is a basis for a separate trial. So we're just going to read this. We're going to read it kind of fast so that you get the points. All right? So let's take a look at the Idaho Criminal Rules of Procedure, Rule 14, Relief from Prejudicial Joinder. And it states, if it appears that a defendant or the state is prejudiced by a joinder of offenses or of defendants in a complaint, indictment, or information, the court may order the state to elect between counts, grant separate trials of counts, grant a severance of defendants, or provide whatever other relief justice requires. In a ruling on a motion by a defendant for severance, the court may order the attorney for the state to deliver to the court for inspection in camera any statements or confessions made by the defendant that the state intends to introduce at trial. Okay? Pretty straightforward, right? But let me give you a little more explanation of what the law really requires for prejudicial joinder. It states that any defendant shall be granted a separate trial as of right if the court finds that the prosecution probably will present against a joint defendant evidence other than reputation or character testimony, which would not be admissible in a separate trial of the moving defendant, and that such evidence would be prejudicial to those against whom it is not admissible. In ruling on a motion by a defendant for severance, the court may order the prosecuting attorney to deliver to the court for inspection in camera any statements or confessions made by the defendants which the prosecution intends to introduce at trial. So what does that really mean? It's what I've talked about in previous videos as it relates to this particular case. If there are inconsistent defenses, then you more than likely will get a separate trial, i.e., you're pointing the fingers at each other. Additionally, if there were statements, admissions that were admissible as to one defendant, for example, let's say hypothetically, Lori Vallow said something to a jailhouse snitch, and that jailhouse snitch was going to come in and testify, it would only be admissible as to Lori Vallow, not admissible as to Chad Daybell. So under those kinds of circumstances, there would in fact be a separate trial. Or if one of those two defendants had in fact confessed, well, those statements would come into one, but it'd be prejudicial to the other. The other defendant wouldn't be allowed to cross-examine that witness because they more than likely wouldn't testify. So there's lots of things to consider in this particular case. But nowhere in the rules, nor in any case law interpreting Rule 14, have I found there could be a lot of media attention if these cases were joined as a basis for no joinder. I would be very surprised if Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow's cases were not joined for trial. Now you've heard the rules, now you've heard an explanation, you can decide based upon the law and what we know thus far. Obviously, like all things in the law, our opinion may change based upon new facts. Law usually stays the same. It's the facts that determine what's going to take place. Next on the docket, Miss Maxwell. We will refer to her as Miss Maxwell, the lady whose former boyfriend was Jeffrey, because otherwise the YouTube algorithms shut down monetization. Well, guess what? Obviously, we know Miss Maxwell has a criminal case, and we've heard that there are civil cases pending against Miss Maxwell. Well, the United States attorney wants the civil case to stop. You think, why would you want to delay justice for the victims in the civil case? Well, because in the civil case, the defendant, Miss Maxwell, her attorneys and her criminal attorneys could sit in on those depositions. That's right, depositions. You have an opportunity to interview the witnesses prior to their testimony at trial. That's huge. Of course, your United States attorney in this particular case doesn't want the civil case to move forward because all his witnesses will be basically cross-examined and they'll be able to get into much more information in the civil case than they ever would have in the criminal case. Because guess what, ladies and gentlemen, contrary to what most people believe, the complaining witnesses, the victims in a criminal case, don't have to speak to the defense. Most of the time, the complaining witness, the first time the attorney has ever had a crack at talking to them or cross-examining them is at trial. That's why being a trial attorney is so much different than being a litigator. A litigator, you get to ask questions, you got all day, you sit at a conference room table, object as to form, go ahead and answer the question. In court, you got one shot at it. If you do really well, maybe the client goes home. Doesn't go so well, guess what? Your client could go to prison for the rest of their life. So that is why the United States attorney wants to slow down the civil case. The U.S. attorney doesn't want their witnesses interviewed again. Anytime the defense can get the complaining witness slash victims to say more, expand upon, guess what? It comes across and looks like an inconsistent statement where they can be cross-examined in court, right? Just like defense counsel always wants the defendant to say as little as possible, so does the prosecuting attorney want the victim to say as little as possible. More statements out there, more likely you say something inconsistent at court, or at least you can spin it as though it's inconsistent. And guess what? You can make it look like the witness is in fact fabricating their story or changing their story to fit the narrative in court that day. We'll see what the judge decides on this particular case. Next on the docket, the not the other woman speaks in the Suzanne Morphew case. For those of you who are not familiar with the Suzanne Morphew case, Suzanne Morphew disappeared on Mother's Day of this year and has not been seen since. Her husband was apparently in Broomfield, Colorado, doing a job at a hotel, like I said, here, literally a hop, skip, and a jump from the Crime Talk studios and Catty Corner, literally from the Crime Talk 1 hangar. Well, there's been rumors, and we haven't talked about any of the rumors of alleged other women because, frankly, that's what they were. Well, the woman who is not the other woman is, in fact, a woman by the name of Morgan Gentile. And she is, in fact, a co-worker of Jeffrey Puckett. As you may recall, Jeffrey Puckett was the co-worker of Barry Morphew, who was called from Salida to come down to Broomfield and basically finish a job. Nothing took place because they really never heard back from Mr. Morphew. Well, Morgan Gentile has been living under somewhat of a suspicious eye because there's been rumors that somehow she was romantically involved with Mr. Morphew. Well, Ms. Gentile says, no, that's not the case, and that she has never had an affair with Mr. Morphew. Now, Ms. Gentile did corroborate Mr. Puckett's claim concerning a hotel room in Broomfield where they spent time and said that there was a chlorine smell, the very strong chlorine smell when you walked in. It actually made your eyes water and began to burn. And the towels were super wet that were on the floor, and it looked like he had made his bed before he left. Now, although Gentile did, in fact, work for Mr. Morphew, she states that she has, in fact, been dismissed from her job, and this has been a very traumatic experience on her, where it's actually affected relationships, her ability to find work, and even having to relocate just because of these rumors. And that's why, you know, ladies and gentlemen, it's so easy, and we see it all the time on YouTube channels where people just throw dirt out there, so to speak. You know, you're really affecting people's lives. So you have to have the information correct, which is one of the reasons why we did not talk about this. We've had this information sent to us, but we couldn't confirm it. But when she actually comes out and speaks to the press and says, I am not the other woman, then we can go forward with that. But she denies any of these rumors whatsoever. And obviously, Ms. Morphew still has not been seen yet. There's going to be a search put on by the family of Suzanne Morphew on September 24th. So if you happen to be in Salida, come on down. Next on the docket, next time you think that you may be having a bad day, just be glad you're not this guy, all right? Let me introduce you to Wesley David Gilreth. He has been sentenced to 15 and a half years in prison for having some very inappropriate photographs on his phone of small children. Well, you may ask, how could this particular gentleman have people discover things on his phone? Well, wait, this is good. Apparently, Mr. Gilreth was riding on a bus here in the Denver area. Our bus system is called RTD, the Regional Transportation District. It's a complete cluster, doesn't pay for itself, and most people don't ever ride public transportation because Denver's not set up to really get around on public transportation, bottom line. Well, anyway, Mr. Gilreth was on the bus, and when he got off the bus on his trip from the Boulder Terminal on May 31st of 2019, he left his phone there. And the RTD employees, being good public servants that they are, realized that the phone was unlocked and that therefore they could try to find out who the owner was, whereupon they found all these images of very young children. Needless to say, the RTD personnel turned the matter over to the police, who turned it over to the FBI, and guess what? Mr. Gilreth was charged for having those naughty photographs on his phone. Ooh, and guess what? It also turns out that maybe he's a full-fledged racist. That's right. They found lots of pictures of Nazi flags, as well as other symbols regarding white supremacy. And they also found handwritten notes bearing names and addresses of at least 15 mosques, synagogues, and other religious centers within a 35-mile radius of his residence, where he believed these to be a hunting guide. So, I don't know if this was necessarily karma for this guy, you know, obviously having some really inappropriate views. He obviously has some very inappropriate sexual deviances, for sure. Maybe that's karma, or maybe this guy was just having a really bad day. But either way, he will have the next 15 and a half years in federal prison to think about the poor decisions that he has made. And so if you ever think you're having a bad day, you can say, at least I'm not that guy. Now, the moment that you have all been waiting for, that's right, the time that we take a recess here and we talk about you going to crimetalksearch.com and signing up for this background subscription service. Please do this. I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, you will be happy that you did. You can do a background search on as many people as you want, and you can do it anonymously. No one is ever going to know. And so when you do this background search, you get information associated with that person's email address, their telephone numbers, their social media, criminal history, including sex offender registry. It's going to include marital records, property records, divorce records, all those things that you may want to know about somebody, particularly if you are starting to get involved in a relationship with someone. Think about it, ladies and gentlemen. It's a small price to pay for this subscription. You can cancel at any time. And if you don't think it's worth it, you can, in fact, cancel. But the reality of it is, if that background search comes back and says, wow, this woman or guy is completely normal, good to go. Sounds like it's worth it. Or if you find something that's wrong with this particular individual, maybe he has multiple phones, maybe he still has a wife, that kind of thing, guess what? Sounds like it'd be worth it. Don't you think you'd like to know up front? Go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, and then a recap of our contestants throughout the week so that you all can tell us who the winner should be. And what does the winner get? That's right, a Crime Talk mug sent to them wherever they are. If they're still in custody, we can't send it there because they won't allow us to ship these kinds of things directly to the jail. But if we know their residence and we can find them, why? Because we've gone to crimetalksearch.com and signed up for that background search, we'll get it to them. All right, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Meet Ms. Daja Tucker. That's right. Now, she is 24 years old, and she had a little altercation at McDonald's. According to the police, Ms. Tucker, intoxicated, when she may have gotten into a little tangle with workers around 10:15. Apparently, Ms. Tucker, and who hasn't been there, was a little upset when she was shorted a cookie when she realized she had just driven away from the drive-through window at McDonald's. Well, instead of simply parking her car, going back inside, no. What does Ms. Tucker do? She begins starting a fight with employees, including damaging the drive-through window itself. That's right, a cookie. Wow. Could you imagine being arrested and having a record for a cookie? Let it go, ladies and gentlemen. Let it go. All right, a quick recap, even though this was a short week because of the Labor Day holiday. But Tuesday, our dumb criminal contestant was Miss Ashley Spencer. And all she wanted for her birthday was for the mother of her husband's new child to disappear. And she just happened to call her friend who works as a correctional officer to see if she knew of anybody who had nothing to lose. And needless to say, the FBI showed up and took over from there. didn't go so well for Ms. Spencer on her birthday. Then on Wednesday, Teresa Stanley, who could forget the naked woman pleasuring herself with a toy in an adult entertainment store? Ladies and gentlemen, you can't make that stuff up. And of course, when the police walked up, she dropped the toy. Then yesterday, we had the mad dialer, Hu Nguyen, who made 1,171 calls to 911, mostly asking if they wanted some Chinese food. And then obviously today, Miss Daja Tucker, who starts a fight when she doesn't get her cookie at McDonald's. As always, tough competition. You can hardly make this stuff up. If you want to go back and see what all the contestants did, just go ahead and take a look at the videos that we put up all week. Thanks for watching. Have a great day. Leave us a comment below. Let me know if you think, based upon the rule for prejudicial joinder, whether you think Chad Daybell is going to get a separate trial from Lori Vallow. I don't think so, at least not yet. Let me know if you think this is a smart move by the U.S. attorney to stop the case in the civil matter against Miss Maxwell. And let me know, hey, at least you're not that guy having a bad day, somebody unlocking your phone. Makes you wonder, if somebody unlocked your phone, would you be embarrassed of what was on there? Let me know. And then finally, please don't forget to vote for our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Have a great weekend. We will see you next week.